You're listening to a Clare FM podcast. Morning Focus broadcasts weekdays from 9am to 12 midday.
The last century, the GAA had a very close connection to the nationalist struggle. Founded in 1884 to promote Irish identity and revive traditional games, the organisation facilitated and fostered nationalist sentiment and the drive towards rebellion against British occupation. That link has been documented now by my next guest in an authoritative and affectionate book. It's The GAA and the War of Independence by Timpak Coogan. Timpak Coogan, good morning to you.
Good morning.
And thank you very much for joining us. A Brexit freeze on for the next few minutes.
There's no such thing in this country, I'm afraid. It's bad news for us all.
It's so it seems. It could be. But look, we'll keep an eye on it as things develop.
Yeah, like the Skibbereen Eagle, we'll keep an eye on the Tsar.
A historian's joke, if I ever heard one. You're writing about the GAA, though, and something that... maybe not to a great detail, but an element of the GAA that will ring true and that a lot of people would feel intuitively that they know about its links with nationalism.
Well, it was solidly, it came before the Gaelic League, remember. It was 1884 it was founded, and the Gaelic League didn't come until 4 years later. And Pearce said that all Irish history originated from the Gaelic League. So if this organisation preceded it, you can see how more important it was. Mm. It was an outlet for young men, and it was supported by the great Archbishop Croke, because it also provided a respite from the awful apathy that settled over the country. I'm afraid we can't get away from Brexit because, think about it, we joined the EU to stop being suppliers of cheap food and cheap labour to our neighbour. But there was no EU in that year, and now that we're bedeviled by high rents, just consider that no rent increase took place in Dublin over the century of the Union. So you can imagine how flat everything was. And one day, this man, Nally, a great athlete from Mayo, and Michael Cusick were walking in the park, a Sunday, in the Phoenix Park, and there was nobody out playing games, there weren't any activities, hopscotch or whatever. So it just symbolises the inertia, and they decided to do something about it. And Archbishop Croke he said it was the saddest and worst thing he had to endure in his archbishopric, when he'd go about the country and see all these fine young men just sitting around ditches, as he said, with humps on them. No work, doing nothing. So it provided, Cusick was not exaggerating when he said it spread like a prairie fire. It was, first of all, of course, it was athletics it majored on.
Yes, yeah.
But it took over from the English. Everything was English, always determined to, everything was pointed, it was a colonial system to make you feel English. You were taught in schools, I mean, earlier, that you were a happy English child. And it was the English games that were the ones people played, and they were the ones that the landlords supported.
And when terms then of getting, shall we say, political in terms, you know, the links with nationalism, was that...
Oh, well,
was that hand in hand with its ethos, or was it a deliberate aim?
It was all part of the... what they called the Celtic Dawn. There was a revival in after the famine. You can imagine how squashed the people were, how downtrodden. And then the Fenian Rising came to nothing in the 60s. But the Republican Brotherhood, the IRB, the Fenians, still was in existence, if, you know, weakened. And they were always on the alert for some outlet for their nationalism. Nally, for example, was a member of the IRB, and possibly Cusick was too, though that's a matter of debate. But the seven men who founded the GAA in Hayes's Hotel, Thurles, in 1884, were probably all Fenians, the exception, certainly, it was one, McCarthy. He used to play rugby. He played for Ireland. Mm. And he suffered in his career in the RIC because of, this nationalist association.
And that was something that I wanted to touch on a little bit with you, Tim Pat, in terms of, you spoke of how Michael Cusick described it as spreading like wildfire, and it did, and it certainly has taken hold, and we can see that to this day in how there is a strong GAA influence in literally every community across the country. But to what extent did it truly spread? Were there many on the outside who would have looked down on it or not taken part, or whatever it may be?
Oh, it had to fight its corner. the people who supported him were generally the Irish, who were the workers, the labourers, the farm labourer, and 12-hour days, and then you played your hurling or your football, and it sort of struck a chord with people. There's a piece in the book, there's a famous man called P.S. O'Hegarty, a great historian. He had been active in Sinn Féin, IRB, and he became Secretary of the Department of Posts and Telegraphs. And he described what was happening to the people, how he became involved in all this. He was passing along a street in Cork to return a library book during his break from his minor civil service job. And he suddenly heard there was a fish or something on. And he heard Irish a girl singing an Irish song in Irish, singing it properly. He'd never heard it before. And it was like a bolt from the blue. He was entranced. And he stood there and he got a vision of Ireland. And he could see, you know, the Celtic past and so on. Things you'd laugh at. But he was so enthralled by that, that many, many years later, when the Irish Bureau of Military History was taking its statements from people who had taken part in the War of Independence, he prefaced everything he wanted to say in all his recollections of the war and military matters by recalling that incident. Now, similar things happened to people all over the country.
Yeah.
And that was part of the whole ethos. And, you know, the RIC from the word go, Dublin Castle, spotted that this, of course, was going to be a great potential breeding ground for recruits for physical force. There is in Ireland a tradition of the rising in every generation, and which we've seen, and we thought we got away from it.
And to what extent was the GAA affected during the rising, and I suppose that the years that followed it as well, with the Civil War, communities and families were split? I'm sure the same was the case for clubs as well at that time.
Well, it was, and the particularly in Kerry, it was when they were interned during after the Civil War or during it. There was great agitation. Clare actually was one of the counties led the agitation, to get the internees out, and they played matches against the Free State side, against the Kerry team, and they were in effect those games. They were in effect the selection teams, the selection matches for the All-Ireland teams, for the team that would enter the championship. And when the first, you can imagine there were fairly sanguinary encounters. A referee's life is not a happy one in this country, as we know recently from the soccer man's misfortunes. But they came together anyway on the football field, and was very healing force in Kerry. And when that match was over and they got to Croke Park as a result of it, the first thing the team did when they ran out in the field was to kneel down and say a prayer where Michael Hogan died. And Hogan and Bloody Sunday kind of sanctified the blood of martyrs on the soil of Croke Park. So it really helped to identify Bloody Sunday, the GAA, hand in hand.
And to what extent then does this period influence the GAA today? We talk about its ethos and its values.
Well, the GAA has shown an admirable capacity to evolve. You remember the great controversial rugby match that was played at Croke Park? Played England there. Well, I went out on the field. I'd heard a rumour. And I went out on Croke Park, on the sacred soil, with Michael McKenna. Peter McKenna, he'd be the development officer of and responsible for building the stadium. We went out, he had the plans, and my rumour was confirmed. Gervin Dempsey scored a great try during that match.
It's the first try of the game,
yeah. And that, where he scored, is the spot Michael Hogan was shot.
I've heard that story, yeah. It's fascinating.
Well, we had
the
plans, and I stood there. Now, he had to, you know, everything has changed now.
Of course, yes, yeah.
But as near as one could say at this remove, you know, I don't know, it could be a few feet out, but that's where Michael Hogan died. But I think the GAA embodies that tradition. You know, they respect their martyrs and the people who went before, but they're evolving. And, you know, modern training methods, the modern stadium, I mean, the clubs around the country are complete. When I used to play rugby, I had a team in the Irish Press, a business house team. We could only play on a Sunday, and we couldn't be photographed because of the ban. We had a lot of GAA players on it. But the... we were mesmerized, at least the GA men were mesmerized by the facilities in the rugby clubs. We only played minor, third, fourth division. Yeah. They were lower, we'd have played in it. But, you know, the kind of pavilions and so on, the cup of tea, the showers, there was none of that in the GA. But if you look at the contemporary GA club then, now, look at what they're like. I mean, you find if you went to Kerry, some of the big clubs, they have restaurants, they have them everywhere, Kilmacultokes. But really, they've come ahead with the times.
In an amateur organisation, they're very professional setups.
They're very professional. And, I mean, just down the road from me here, I think it's very symbolic. Coola have their A ground. They don't really have a pitch of their own. And yet they field 90 teams a week.
Yeah.
And if you saw the yummy mummies dropping the kids off there on a Sunday morning, Saturday morning, the weekend, they go from 3 and 4 right up. And beside it is the bus, the airport bus. And many of those kids have, and will get that bus to the airport and they'll emigrate. And when they get to the other side, wherever they're going, there'll be a GAA club. And instead of going to the pub for contacts and a job and a bit of socialisation, they'll have a GAA club to back them up and the network. It's one of the most valuable organisations in Europe.
And
ever.
It does so much in terms of spreading Irish culture and maintaining Irish culture abroad.
In a very good way. And yeah. The Blood of Martyrs thing is not, lightly use that phrase. This man is very much in the news at the moment, Sammy Wilson, the DUP spokesman. You see him on the telly, night, noon and morning. And
I thought one of Sammy's, talking about Brexit.
One of his great statements that's on record is that the GAA is the sporting wing of the IRA. Now, that kind of attitude in Belfast during the Troubles quite recently, it meant that people were shot for their membership of the IRA. Possession of a hurley could get you killed. We all know about Cross McGlen and the investiture of it by the army and helicopters landing in the middle of matches and all the rest of it. But St. Enda's Club in Belfast was actually the most bombed club. You don't hear much about it.
No. Just finally then, Tipat, in terms of going back to your own book, and it's dealing with a very different time, of course, in terms of the War of Independence. We've reflected on how that time has influenced today, but what do you hope people can get from your own book?
Well, I hope they can get a certain pride in the country and in their own culture, a decent sense of nationalism, community service, athleticism, things that grew out of were like the torching games in the 20s, where they didn't just have games, but Yeats and Lady Grey and other people put on cultural events, and it all helped to the cultural awakening, and it was all part of the warp and woof of founding a state and developing it. And the strength of the GAA, is parallel to the strength of the country, with all its mistakes and all the flaws the GAA have, like the flaws we have ourselves, homelessness and so on.
Yeah.
It's growing and it's there, and it brings a lot of pride and a lot of pleasure to the people.
Absolutely indeed. Tipat Coogan's book is The GAA and the War of Independence. It's out now. Tipat Coogan, thank you for joining us this morning.
I'm delighted to.
All the very best. Do take care. It's Morning Focus. We're here with you on till 12 o'clock. Do keep your comments coming to us on 086 1800 964.
You're listening to a Clare FM podcast. Morning Focus broadcasts weekdays from 9 a.m. to 12 midday.